So, this is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 145B, page 608. And we've just been looking at some statements about which I seem to have more to say than the statement gives. Oh, goodness. We're dealing with the universals, okay. At least that which deals with our local universe. To me, the word universe always means the grand entirety of many dimensions, and people have a habit of calling dimensions by the name universes. There are many universes. Yeah, universes. If we call differing dimensions by the name universe. But as I say, to me, it's the grand totality, the one, and all of its many dimensional parts. So the seven stars of the Great Bear, or Ursa Major, are involved in an intricate relation with Ursa Minor and the Pleiades. That's been our first point, and we've talked about that in the correspondences to possible head chakras within the one about whom naught may be said, that these constellations can represent. And what I didn't put into this, and I should have, is that the hundreds of Pleiades represent maybe the smaller petals, but maybe the seven Pleiades, the seven major Pleiades, represent the sevenfold jewel in the lotus, or jewel, within the head center, within the heart in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. So what I'm trying to work on at the moment is the way that the Pleiades may represent a throat center in some respect, but they certainly have a large correspondence with the head center of this great being. They are the hub, and they are the cluster of stars, you might say. Hundreds. We don't have such a thing in our local cosmos. There are these varying clusters. My friend Peter Kubaska is excellent at pointing out which are the clusters here. And they seem to be expressions of larger entities than those which express simply through a constellation. I do want to say that, perhaps, here, the entity expressing through a cluster of stars, like the Pleiades, is assumed to be a greater entity than an entity which expresses only through a constellation of stars. A cluster and a constellation are quite different. We have this ongoing idea of the levels within our universe, and they are usually represented outwardly by aggregations of stars. A constellation is an aggregation of stars. A cluster is an aggregation of stars. Arms of a galaxy are aggregation of stars. A galaxy is an aggregation of stars. A family of galaxies is an aggregation of stars, and families of galaxies, and on it goes. The star is the unit with which we can detect the various aggregations. Of course, I guess you could say at a certain point, once we reach the galactic level, well, the star is the fundamental unit, but we could say aggregations of galaxies, you know, which, if we analyze it, are really aggregations of stars. But we can't say they're aggregations of planets because some stars don't have aggregations of planets. I suppose, ultimately, we can say they are aggregations of atoms or of subatomic particles or of the ultimate particle event, the smallest allowable unit, as I theorize, within the universe. The UP, UPE. Well, we will see whether UPs exist. If bubbles in the Koilan exist, and if they are, and they are tiny, tiny when compared with the atoms on the cosmic physical plane which they constitute, then perhaps even the bubble in the koilon is divisible and can ultimately reach the stage of the Yupi. Now, all of this has to do with whether the cosmic planes higher than the cosmic physical are actually prakritic, are actually somehow composed of tiny units. If they are prakritic, we necessarily need for the bubble in the koilon to be divisible. But that gets into another matter concerning the world of being in contrast with the mosaic world. Are there seamless worlds which are pure ideation without fragments? The fragments being, you know, let's say the bubble and the koilon and all the other aggregations which can be created from it, you know, namely the atoms of the different levels, some 49 levels or even 343 levels of the cosmic physical plane. Oh, cosmic fire. So, the entity expressing through a cluster of stars like the Pleiades is assumed to be a greater entity than an entity which expresses only through a constellation of stars. Then we go on to point two, and I started at point one, but I guess got sidetracked. The 12 constellations of the zodiac, each with its own interrelations, you know, just the way we have interrelations in our solar system between planets and triangles. You're going to have triangles between the constituents of a zodiacal constellation, aren't you? I mean, for instance, look at the Great Bear. It's not a constellation of the zodiac, but wouldn't there be a triangle between Al-Kaid, Mizar, and Alioth, the names of three stars in the tail of the Great Bear? Would there not be? And we can, you know, subdivide the Dipper itself, the square, and say, well, there's four triangles there. We could do that. There's two kinds of diagonals, and you can create two triangles based on each diagonal as a baseline, and then use the crossing diagonal. The diagonal, let's see, between Megrez and Merak will give the Megrez-Merak-Dubay triangle and the Megrez-Merak-Fegda triangle. But the baseline or diagonal between Dubay and Fegda will give the Dubay-Fegda-Merak triangle and the Dubay-Fegda-Megrez triangle. One day I will overcome the liability of not drawing things. But someone will come along with a better concretizing power who will understand what I'm saying and will draw it. Right now I'm just moving forward. The 12 constellations of the zodiac, each with its own interrelations, peculiar to its own integral life. In other words, those triangles arising within a zodiacal constellation are peculiar to it, form each of them part of a triangle of energies. There's no zodiacal constellation which is not part of a triangle of three zodiacal constellations. Even if a constellation is only part of one triangle, it's at least part of one triangle. So, you know, Gemini, Taurus, Scorpio, Aquarius, I may be leaving one out. They are, Taurus, I said, Taurus, Gemini, Scorpio, Aquarius, let's see, Pisces, Capricorn, Sagittarius, and Libra, are presently, and as these things are appreciated from the Earth, only part of one ray triangle. A triangle transmitting a ray from whatever source. Yet, each of them is definitely at least part of one triangle. There's no zodiacal constellation and its lord which is left out. So Each of these triangles is a unit in itself, but in conjunction with the other triangles, forms part of that major quaternary, which is the cosmic analogy of the quaternary of the one life. Soul and the dual psychic nature, called in the esoteric books Kama Manas, plus the vital nature. These four are the expression of the one ineffable life, which I'm assuming again is the one about whom naught may be said. There are many of these ineffable causes, but for us, this being is the cause. So each of these triangles is a unit in itself, but in conjunction with the other triangles, seven of them, forms part of that major quaternary, which is the cosmic analogy of the quaternary of the one life, soul, and the dual. This is an interesting quaternary because it is not the one we expect. It's consisting of life, soul, Kama Manas, and vitality. So maybe soul is including the mind, and somehow life is the monad. So basically we have life, soul. Well, no, we have life, soul, and Kama and Manas are the two that go together. They represent mind and desire plus the etheric nature. And it is considered a quaternary, even though it has really more parts. Now, another way of viewing this quaternary can be as the life, soul. No, the quaternary of the one life. Okay. The quaternary of the one life. Another way of viewing this, maybe a better way, is this way. Soul, Manas, Kama, Ether. This is a quaternary. And it is not the lower quaternary, which is generally considered to be only the cosmic, the lower quaternary, the cosmic personality. No. This would involve also the soul. So, how many of these triangles are there? There are seven, and each of the triangles is a unit in itself, but in conjunction with the other triangles. And this is where the mystery lies. How will we conjunct these triangles? How will we structure these triangles? That's the question. How will we do that? In order to come up with the soul, Kama, Manas, and vitality, can we do that? How can we structure these triangles? Can we do this via the triplicities? Or do we have to combine the zodiacal triangles? And I think I'm going to make here a method of talking about them. Zodiacal triangles. Right. Zodiacal triangles. That's good. Or do we have to, combine the zodiacal triangles in some other manner to relate to this quaternary of the one life? See, it's not the personality as a quaternary. Oftentimes, you understand that there are four elementals, three elementals and a summating elemental, physical, emotional, mental elemental, and they're combination or summation, a fourth elemental personality. But we're not doing that. We're looking here at soul as the highest point. It's kind of like the top of a tetrahedron with Kama and Manas related, but they are separate, essentially. And then the vital nature, and we're leaving the physical body out of it. There, as you learn from a treatise on cosmic fire around page 260 and for a number of pages following, there are many different ways of looking at the principles and vehicles of man. There are different ways of combining them. There's not just one rigid method. You can look at any aggregation of units and group them differently. So these four are the expression of the one ineffable cause. And what's interesting here is that in this being, the one ineffable cause, this is a different perspective, and I'm glad to be seeing it here. In this being, the zodiacal constellations are not just the petals in the heart and head center of the one about whom naught may be said, but are correlated with the soul, Manas, Kama, and ether, or let's see, vital body. And this is a different assignment. One of the things we find as we look through the books is that the zodiac, will it be of constellations or of signs, have different foci, some of them lower, some of them higher. At one point we're told they are focusing subdiaphragmatically. We're told this in a treatise on white magic. Then we're told that they connect with the soul. Then we are told they connect with the monad. We're also told they represent the highest head center in the etheric nature of the one about whom naught may be said, namely the heart and the head center. So there are different assignments of connections of these zodiacal constellations, and we seem to be looking here at yet another one. They do have a pervasive effect, I think, on all levels of the human being, and perhaps their function within the one about whom naught may be said is somewhat variable. They seem to be connected with the quaternary, which includes the desire nature. Could it be the water signs? The quaternary, which includes the mental nature, could it be the fire signs? That includes the soul, and maybe I should call it soul triad. Soul triad as true ego. Would that be the air signs? And they include the etheric nature of the one about whom that be said. Would that be the earth signs? So I guess what I'm seeing here is that these triangles have different functions and can be somehow included in this named quaternary here of the one about whom naught may be said. Now, it's a lot easier to go by the four elements and say, these represent soul, mind, emotions, and vital body. If we have to go by some kind of combinations of triangles, we have to know the manner in which the triangles would be combined to somehow supply the energy for these elements or these factors in the quaternary. And, you know, and I'll just say this for my own sanity, that the method of combining the triangles so that they can represent the quaternary quaternary as here given is beyond my understanding. So that's like saying, well, this isn't understood by me at least. And, the one about whom naught may be said is said to be a great ineffable being. Ineffable, indescribable. This is so because the one about whom naught may be said is, quote, indescribable. But we can break our minds against it, for a while until maybe the intuition comes in and gives us the picture. Our solar system of supreme unimportance, and there's Master DK with what verges on dry humor, I would say. compared to him, I think my humor is very wet. But, okay, of supreme unimportance is yet a part of the sevenfold appearance of that same essential cause. Now, is he saying our little solar system with one star, soul, or does he mean our constellation, the constellation of our local cosmic logos, and which includes our one star solar system? Well, it's still a part of the sevenfold appearance. Now, if, well, a part. Let's put it like this. If our solar system is a heart center in our local cosmic logos, from one perspective, the seven solar systems of which ours is one, then indeed our solar system is a part of the sevenfold appearance of the essential cause, which to us is our local one about whom not may be said. Now, I know all of this stuff has to appear like the height of speculation, but if we can work out the patterns of relationships between these great beings, we might be able to tell something very important about more practical matters here below. And we will be convinced of this great unity in which we live and move and have our being, and we will be filled with a positivity and a rejoicing in this unity, and will be able to convey the apprehension of this unity to other people, for whom then there will be a far wider and yet more closely related horizon, as DK promises us in the beginning of the book. As you know from a study of the secret doctrine, our solar system is a tiny reflection, a replica of the 1, the 3, the 7, the 12. The 1 solar logos, the 3... how can we do it? The one solar logos, the 3 persons of the logoic, let's make it capital, Trinity, the 7 sacred planets, and the 12 planets. That's one way. 12 planets, or 12 signs which show up in relation to each of the planets and to the sun itself. That's another theory, but the idea is that I got this really from Alan Leo, and I just extrapolated on the in his book Esoteric Astrology, which I read uncomprehendingly some time ago, and I think I do better now. But around the Earth are the lunes, like sections of an orange, which are concentrations of Devic substance, which are attuned to the different constellations, and I expect it to be so for each one of the planets. So those are the signs. Signs are concentrations of Devic influence, or Devic attuned Devic substance. So signs are 12-fold, are concentrations of Devic, of attuned, of Devic substance attuned to the 12 zodiacal constellations. And every one of the planets will have its own kind of astrology, and its timing will be different, and we may be going into the age of Aquarius, but that isn't at all necessarily so for the lives on the other planets. They have their own ages according to the orientation of their, well, we call it vernal equinox. Their first point in the cycle. Some of them may not have, you know, the seasons, and certainly the seasons would look very different on planets other than the Earth, but there will be an alignment with the beginning of the cycle when we have equal days and equal nights. And on most of the planets, there will be some point where there is a vernal equinox with equal days and equal nights. And that will be the beginning point of its sign cycle of 12 concentrated Devic groupings attuned to the constellations. And the constellations will have their effect according to any precession of that vernal equinox point. Now, unless, of course, I mean, I think the planets are pretty well gyrating from, what can we call it, from right to left, whereas counterclockwise would be from left to right. They're pretty well, it seems to me, gyrating from right to left, and if you turn that upside down, for Venus, it looks like it's gyrating, I suppose, from left to right. But if we keep on lifting it, then it comes back to being right to left. Venus may have made one complete, well, maybe in a certain cycle, it's upside down. Its north pole is pointing downward, and its south pole upward. But that also can happen with the Earth, we've been told, in the ancient priestly understanding of the movements of the Earth in its own range and sphere, and also in relation to the Sun. Well, there's a lot going on in the astrological department of hierarchy. Their speculations, of course, have to run far beyond what we can conceive, but it's all done by law in our solar system, and where everything here is controlled by law. And it's just really important for humanity to wake up to the fact of divine law setting the parameters of all motions according to the divine will, of which law is the expression. That we live in a system where great intelligences preside, and they preside according to their will, which works out as certain laws and certain rules. Well, laws anyway. Rules have to do with whether the relatively ignorant entity will follow the laws. Because of that innate, inherent correspondence, of the correspondence in our solar system to the basic numbers, the 1, 3, 7, 12, because of that innate inherent correspondence, it has within itself the capacity to respond to energies emanating from the fountainhead of light and will. Why is love left out? We're also told the great invocation is an invocation of power and light. Why is love left out? But there must be a reason. So our solar system has the capacity to respond. Our solar system has the capacity to respond to the one about whom naught may be said, which here is called, I think, this the fountain head of light and will. More than this, I may not say, not permitted to say, or may not say if he wants to abide by the law of economy, because the entire theme is too vast for human thinking with its limitations of consciousness and its inadequacy of language. Only someone standing outside of human thinking can see this. So only someone standing outside human thinking can see this. But even a dim perception of that vast aggregation of intelligent forces and this immense concatenation of stupendous divine intentions, they're all linked together. It's a concatenation. That's a linked multiplicity, and with the idea of sequence in it, will serve to bring into clearer light the realization that our solar system and consequently our planet is part of this vast whole, kept alive by its grace, which is, I suppose, the means by which lesser beings, for no merit of their own, benefit from the munificence of the greater being. Kept alive by its grace, fused by its will. Grace, it has such an interesting term. It's a very Christian term in a way, and it has to do with pure benevolence. No recompense involved. It's not a return because of the status of the lesser being or the merit of the lesser being. Pure. Benevolence, unrelated to the merit of the lesser being who benefits from the benevolence of the greater being. So, vastness. There's a way of wearing away irritation, we are told by Master Moria, by contemplating the cosmos, by having cosmos perception. It all, I'm reminded of a humorist by the name of Harry Golden, who was writing maybe 50 years ago. He was a Jewish humorist, and he had this essay about why he never gets mad at a waitress. You know how it is when you're in a restaurant, where is she or where is he? Why have they disappeared? Why don't they take care of our table? Have they forgotten us? Blah, blah, blah. Irritation, etc. And he just starts to expand his mind into the cosmos. And he comes back, finally, to his position in the restaurant, a changed man, with all irritation gone. I think that's what Master Moria means by wearing away irritation through cosmic perception. So, even a dim perception of that vast aggregation of intelligent forces and this immense concatenation of stupendous divine intentions, each being is, in a way, an intention within the universal will. Each being is an intention within the universal will serve to bring into clearer light the realization that our solar system and consequently our planet, here he's just talking about a one-star solar system, is a part of this vast whole, kept alive by its grace, its pure benevolence, fused by its will. We have to say that will has fusing power. It's not just magnetically attracted. It's like, you know, Vulcan under immense heat fuses forms of metal together, fused by its will and preserved by its intention. The will to sustain cohesion. The will to sustain cohesion. Because these forces are, we are. Because they persist, we persist. So it's no good for them to disappear before our system disappears, although their external instruments may in part disappear, though they subjectively would remain. Because they are, because they persist. We persist because they move in form, in space and time. We do the same. And these great beings or intentions, whose consciousness is far beyond ours, even when we say we are rid of space and time, that these beings also have a relation to space and time, which I've tried to explain in places lost in this text, in which I've explained better. The creation of space and time is the function of the great breath. Time seems preeminent because you can measure the appearances and disappearances of universes, perhaps in a sequential manner. But there are other ways in which each one of them lasts for no time at all. Each definite unit of time is what I call an ultimate negligibility. A quantity so small that it will always be smaller than any other definite quantity. So if you combine together an infinite number of ultimate negligibilities, what do you get? I still haven't decided what you get, but it may be that there's no time at all. And as far as space goes, it's simply a perception, as far as I can see. And if there is no self-perception, really, and if there is no self-perception, there is no space. I'm not talking about capital S-P-A-C-E in terms of being the absolute. That's just another word that's used for the absolute. What you begin to understand is that you can choose whatever words you want. Can they evoke a sense of that to which they refer? There's only relativity in words. There's no rigidity in words. If we have a word is simply a sound symbol, you can choose what you want to represent the reality. But some people fixate on the word as if it were the thing. And we have to detach ourselves from the word as if it were the thing. Many people spend their whole life in the mind dealing with symbols and not with the thing in itself. And when we look at the appearances too, the contents of consciousness, we have to know that they are fundamentally essence, and they are not what they seem to be. They are, maybe as the Buddhists would say, they are empty of essence, empty of reality. The appearance is empty of reality, but their essence is essence. Number four, what have we here? It looks like we're starting a new section. Maybe we are. And we'll go here to page 609. Cosmic energies and transformation. Yes, this is a new section. It's not just that the four continues from the three, they're of a different order. Let us briefly get an idea of this stream of energies as they move outward into space in spherical form, I would imagine, from Ursa Minor. Major, excuse me, as they move outward into space from Ursa Major, and as they are transmitted through certain zodiacal constellations to our solar system. Now, interestingly enough, let's say a ray energy is moving in a spherical manner. There's no reason why it should be specifically directed. It could be directed towards a constellation, but if it moves in a spherical manner, it will touch other constellations and aggregations of stars which have nothing to do with our with the particular constellations to which it is related. It may have a totally different relation and meaning to those others. But when it touches, as it inevitably will because it works in a spherical manner, when it touches, let us say, Aries, Leo, Capricorn, it will have a particular connection with them. And they with it, and they will transmit it in a way which maybe other constellations cannot transmit because they are not attuned to the basic quality. Let's say the, you know, a first ray influence, whether it's the cosmic Manu or whether it's the first star in the Great Bear, has a spherical radiation, and it may touch many constellations, both zodiacal and non-zodiacal, be received or be tuned out, but especially tuned in by Aries, Leo, and Capricorn. So the stream of energies as they move outward into space, and by the way, I suppose, you know, kind of overlapping with each other, creating what? Some intricate pattern, because we've got these points in space radiating spherically, thus the various seven ray radiations all intersect each other, and that intersection, something must happen with it. Sometimes he describes the great serpent with a certain geometrical tracery upon its back. I remember once that Keith did an excellent rendition of that. It was so long ago, but it seemed that he had captured something and knew about it. Maybe he can find it in all his papers one day. So as they move outward in space from Earth, Ursa Major, as they are transmitted through certain zodiacal constellations in our solar system, and thence via the Sun to the seven sacred planets, and of course they'll reach the non-sacred planets as well, the ones that are related to the sacred planets. Just as Earth and Mars are particularly related to Saturn, and Saturn will be a receiver, but somehow it will transmit. We don't know whether there's a direct relation between the prototypes and the non-sacred planets. Is there a direct relation between the prototypes and the non-sacred planets? Or must the energy reach the non-sacred planets through the sacred planets, which receive the energy of the prototype? Excuse me. Now these energies, transmitted and received, produce what are called transformations on our non-sacred planets. Or, you know, I would say, what's a transformation? A transformation, from one perspective, is a rearrangement of the constituents of a form until the rearranged form conforms to the archetype of which it is, to the archetype, I'll just say, with which it is correlated. So we have to change the form until the form is right, and we have to upgrade the, it involves also transmutation, the upgrading of matter, you know, transmutation, the upgrading of matter. And then the second aspect determines the pattern in which the matter is to be arranged, and the third aspect moves the matter into that pattern, and the first aspect of divinity sustains the movement, providing the power to move. So anyway, these high energies are going to produce transformations on our non-sacred planet. We need it. Now, they're going to be, they will be dividing a lot of squares. They will be diagonalizing a lot of squares and creating two triangles, which will create a star of life, as DK says. Probably an old Pythagorean method where they looked at the squares and said, how can we create triangles out of these, and what do these triangles represent? And what would be created would be a seal of Solomon, or the six-pointed star, far more ancient, of course, than the Hebrew religion, of course. These produce what are called transformations on our non-sacred planet, the Earth, bringing it increasingly, the Earth, non-sacred planet, the Earth, bringing it increasingly into line with the will aspect of divinity, because the will sustains archetypal relationship. Without the will, the archetypes fall apart. The archetypes are patterns of energy which are sustained by the will. Archetypes are patterns of subtle energy, or very subtle energy, relatively speaking, which are sustained by the will. In other words, they they are, because the will is. Without the will and the energy provided, disintegration. Things would not be. They would not be held in existence. So it's a constant feeding of sustaining power. The will provides a constant feeding of sustaining power, making it possible for patterns to exist and be sustained in the form in which they exist. So you have in reality the following explanatory diagram, which will make the whole process somewhat clear to you. This is diagram 3, and we cannot transpose it, so we just have to look at it. I'd love to get everything into this, you know, big laborious diagram, a big kind of a document that I'm creating. But in a way, it's on your video here. One of my friends told me, well, you can't so easily just take a snapshot of what's on the screen. And that may be the case, but others tell me that it's not so difficult either. So everything that's been said and shown in these videos, I think, can be snapshot. Diagram 3 here, one of the stars of the Great Bear and one of the seven rays as we conceive the rays, and that is the transcending factor. Now, as I've been at pains to say, I believe the truly transcending factor is something larger, by far, than one of the rays as it is transmitted through the seven major stars of the Great Bear. I believe it is coming from the seven spirits before the throne of the one about whom naught may be said. Good Lord. I believe that the source of the seven rays, and even that's not the source, you know, of the seven rays. The seven spirits before the throne. No. Well, I should have that. That should be there. Spirits before, okay, let's call it spirits before the throne, and we'll do it this way. Spirits, whoop, well, this is a little casual, right? Spirits before the throne. Spirits before the throne, SBTT. So the source of the seven rays, the seven, aha. And I want to do it this way too, if you'll allow me. Seven spirits before the throne. Oh, seven spirits before the, there it is. I've got it. SSBT. It's been a long time. So the source of the seven rays is the seven spirits before the throne of the universal logos, the one. And the seven spirits before the throne of the one about whom naught may be said are very tiny beings compared to the first, to the prime evil seven spirits. Those are the, to my way of thinking, you know, expanding the idea universally, those are the real sources of the seven rays, the ultimate number gods, as I call them in the infinitization of selfhood, where numbers are deities. But for our purposes, the seven stars of the Great Bear are the transmitters. Even though locally, in our local one about whom not may be said, there must be seven spirits before the throne of the one about whom not may be said. They're analogous to the seven spirits within Shambhala. Seven spirits before the throne. They are called the luminous seven or the radiant seven in that section, and they're not the same as the Kumaras. So even, let's hold the analogy, even in the one about whom not be said, there will be a radiant seven. Let's, well, just, you know, trust me for that. There are a radiant seven. There will be a radiant seven and seven Kumaras as well. So, 14. A 14. And when we talk about the seven spirits before the throne, you see, if the planetary logoi are in our solar system, the seven spirits before the throne, then seven great constellations, which are as centers in the one about whom not may be said, must be the seven spirits before the throne in the one about whom not may be said. And then we still will be looking for the higher higher correspondences. We'll be looking for correspondences to the three Buddhas of activity and to the three esoteric Buddhas, and you'll get a 14 there. And I begin to wonder, I'm just going to put it down so I don't forget it. Whether it has any value or not, I don't know. But perhaps we can correlate the radiant seven to the seven head centers within the head and the seven Kumaras, or six of them, well, the seven Kumaras with the centers above the head, and I'll just say in the Tibetan headdress. This is something to research, you know, as the picture comes together. So back to diagram three, transcending, transmitting, transforming, transfiguring. We have to remember those. There's nothing here called transmuting. Usually we have the triangle of transmuting, transforming, transfiguring, then translating, perhaps, would go beyond that. And then maybe transcending, or transubstantiating, and then maybe transcending. But I'm not sure. The particular Catholic meaning of transubstantiation may not be useful when we're thinking here of the occult interpretations. So the transmitting agencies for the rays coming from the seven spirits before the throne of the one about whom naught may be said which are constellations, are certain constellations which bear the same relation to the one about whom not may be said as the planets bear to the solar logos. These zodiacal translation, the zodiacal constellations transmit the rays originating from the radiant seven of the one about whom not may be said. And they are focused into the sun, which is the transforming agent, and I suppose is somehow adapting that energy for use by the planets and lesser lives. Stepping it down, which means to step down its frequency but preserve the numbers which make it resonant. So I'll put that down. To transform is to step down a higher frequency so that it is assimilable by lower lives. But in the stepping down, to preserve the correct frequency numbers so that the that which is stepped down is still resonant with the original, the original source and its frequency. It's like having the strings in a piano, you know, some of them will vibrate when you hit a very low note, perhaps a sonorous low note. Higher strings will vibrate because of the harmonics, the little tones that are produced in addition to the bass tone. But they will only vibrate if the mathematical proportion is preserved. That which is out of mathematical relation, which is a mathematical relationship, which determines resonance, will not vibrate. So the same goes when stepping a higher frequency down. The lower frequencies which result from the stepping down process have to be mathematically resonant with the higher frequency. And then there is a true transformation. That's what allows the higher frequency continuum to be able to pass through. Because if you stepped it down, the higher frequency, in such a way that was not mathematically coordinated with the higher frequency, there would be a blockage, and the higher frequency could not make its way through. So this is what we call attunement. Attunement. And Antikorana is a mathematically resonant relationship between substances. So there is a whole resonant aspect of the Antikorana. And, you know, there are keynotes and key pitches and so forth for each one of the planes and subplanes. And only when we know the mathematics can we control. When we know the mathematics, then we can control the different substances. But obviously these things have to be secrets of initiation, because we are certainly proving that we can barely handle atomic energy, which is so crude compared to the kind of powers we're talking about here. Excuse me. So the moral development of the individual is indispensable in his sense of the wholeness and how he is reacting, how he's acting upon others within the wholeness, his relation to the whole, and his determination to serve the whole is indispensable before these secrets of the higher frequencies and their relationship, the notes, the colors, the symbols, the vibrations, can be conferred. Otherwise, we'd be taking the whole system apart just to serve the ends of some lower insignificant factor, such as the human ego, which doesn't even exist in a way. It's just a state of perception. So the higher cannot be conferred upon the lower until the lower really does serve the higher. Then further in diagram three here, into the transfiguring powers of the planets, the sacred planets and the non-sacred planets. And the Earth, you see, is in a way a non-sacred planet. The place where the Earth might be found is empty, and there is one of the sacred planets that goes straight to the Earth, from the Sun to that sacred planet to the Earth. And that way our Earth is equipped with all of the ray energies, and all these zodiacal energies reach it. So the Earth is the recipient. The transcending factor which transmits to the transformer, which receives the transformed energy and transfigures it, so that the which again is to change the configuration. I guess it's obvious in a way, but transfigure, TRFFG. That should be there, shouldn't it? That should be part of our story. TRFG. Transfiguration. Transfiguration. So transfiguration is a change in configuration, and a beneficent change assisting those on various levels. Usually transfiguration is considered a term, an ascending term, if I can use that word. We move from transmutation to transformation to transfiguration. It represents generally the third degree and some sort of configuration which really responds to the higher archetype. But now we have it as part of a descending diagram. So these energies are adequately transformed, but maybe must be reconfigured for planetary reception, perhaps. Let's see. With trans, with transfiguration in a descending pattern, the transformed energies must be reconfigured for assimilation by various recipients. Now, right now we have the Earth as a recipient, but we well realize that we could have any of the planets as a recipient, and then the Earth would be numbered as one of the non-sacred planets. Well, maybe what we could do here, see, always among the non-sacred planets, something has to be missing if it's the recipient. So it'll probably be along the central line and it'll be vacant, but let's suppose Mars was down here. Then we would have Pluto, the Earth, and the planet veiled by the Moon, and the planet veiled by the Sun, not necessarily in that order, of course. And then Mars would be the recipient. And there would probably be a correlation with one of these sacred planets. If a sacred planet is the recipient, then it passes its energy, well, does it really? Does it really pass its energy on to a non-sacred planet? It should. Saturn will pass to Mars and to Earth. It should pass. But what I notice is the recipiency seems, for the sacred planet, seems to stop right here. except if there is a non-sacred recipient, which from one of the sacred planets passes the energy to it, which one of the sacred planets passes to it. So it's as if these energies of the ray are passed to the non-sacred planets from the sun, and not via the sacred planets at all. But so let's look at that in diagram 3. The ray is passed from the sun to the non-sacred planets and to the sacred planets. But is it also possible, in a way, that the ray will be transmitted from the sun to a sacred planet? No, S-A-C. That's spiritual fire. That's no good. To a sacred planet, and thence to a non-sacred planet with which the sacred planet is correlated, like Saturn is correlated to Mars and the Earth. We don't know what is correlated. Well, Mars is correlated to Pluto, so I suppose if something reaches Mars, it will also reach Pluto, because Mars is the alter ego of Pluto. But what will reach the planet veiled by the sun, non-sacred, and the planet veiled by the moon, non-sacred? So this is the idea. This is about the above is a question regarding the modes of transmission of ray energy to non-sacred planets. Because if we have, and the idea is there should be a line of transmission from certain sacred planets to sacred, sacred planets, from certain sacred planets to certain non-sacred planets, to which the sacred planets are related. Okay. So that's the first time I really noticed that, because I've been proposing something different, which I think it's reasonable, just the way the mental energy does reach the physical energy, so the Saturnian energy would reach the Earth energy. We do receive from the sun, of course, but we also receive from planets which are superior to ourselves. And I guess we'd have to use the chakra analogy. We might receive directly from the soul in our lower chakras, but we also receive from higher chakras that which passes from the soul through the higher chakras to the lower chakras. There are two modes of reception here. Two modes of reception. There is only one way that I can give you an idea of the distribution of energies, their limitation within the bounds of the zodiac, and their focusing within the periphery of our solar system. Let me make it specific as regards one of the rays and its triangular relationship as given in tabulation 10. So then we go to triangle 4, and people have, oh my, I think I've done it now. All right. This is the This is a rather longer program. So sorry. End of Esoteric Astrology, Venture Number 145B, page 610. I just got going. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology 145C, page 610.